Well, hi, everybody, and welcome. How are you?
Good.
Hi, Dave.
Great. Welcome. Let's start with wins and progress notes. What's going on? And keep in mind to address anything that might be of help for us to talk about, any challenges with the material, with your clients, any vignettes that would be helpful for us to learn from. So let's just do a check-in. What are you up to? Please, someone begin.
Okay, this is Emmy. Hello.
Welcome, hey. It's 11 o'clock your time, right?
Yeah, it's really hard for me to stay up this late.
Wow, yeah, I understand.
So progress notes for me, I've been, I work with a lot of artists, and for the last year I've been, there's certain criteria that we have to do for, to be taken seriously in different avenues of the art world. And one of them was that we have to have, we have to meet certain criteria. So we have gotten to
the we you're referring to now when you say we.
Okay. So if I want to take them to a juried art exhibition or if I want to do anything in certain fields, I have to meet certain criteria. And so this month we decided to try taking them to Affordable Art Fair, which is in New York. And so I've gotten a group of artists together for that and made them feel like they can do that. So we're going to put
are
in
you serving as a mentor coach or help me understand the context. I'm still quite not with you.
Okay, so I don't at this point coach. I for my case study I have coached one artist.
Okay.
But
what's your role
point,
with the group that you're referring to?
It is pretty much coaching them. So getting them to the point where they're feeling comfortable going to these kind of exhibitions.
Okay, do they pay you?
Yeah, I'm getting paid for that.
By them?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah,
so
they pay for
in essence.
Yeah, it is coaching, but it's kind of I'm trying to figure out a new way of doing gallery work without having to take on so much risk for the gallery work. This is why they end up paying. So I work with them, and I find that by having them pay, they take their artwork more seriously. Because, and I don't know if it's the emerging artists or if this would work, or if this is just the European artists, or if American artists would be the same. But I feel like if they put in a financial, if they put in some kind of financial input, you know, like a stake in the situation, then they take it more seriously. And if I don't have
a number of studies, so you're very active.
Oh, okay, good.
have you considered a mentor coach for your coaching business?
Pardon me?
Have you considered a mentor coach for your coaching business to help? To be a catalyst and get you jump started with that?
Do you mean for this?
To help you with your business, with your coaching business, have you considered your own mentor coach to facilitate your coaching firm and your coaching business?
I haven't thought about that yet because I don't know if I want to go with the artist, if I want to focus on artists for this. I've been working on this a project, but I don't know if I want to be working on coaching them because.
Okay. Do you want to develop a coaching business?
I do want to develop a coaching business. I just don't know if I want to focus on artists for that.
Okay.
Because they're finances.
It might be useful to have a mentor coach for that if you ever decide to do that and really jumpstart your business and get things more structured and move ahead for massive success.
Okay.
Go back to where you were.
Okay. Well, I'm happy that they have studies that show that it actually works because that is the way that I felt like it. I've tried it the other way, and I had lukewarm results. But when I make them make a financial investment and they're able to recoup it, I've set up in a scenario where they're able to recoup the money, but they have to do... they have to meet certain criteria. And but I always get paid. So for me, this is a way of getting them to take their art careers more seriously. And I find it works really well for me.
Okay.
And it takes a lot of stress off.
Interesting.
But I had tried the other way where I would, and I have to because...
What is the other way? Can you describe that in a sentence?
Yeah, in one sentence. Basically, I was giving them an opportunity, which they have no financial stake in. And no, they don't have to put any investment in. They are given, because the different art exhibitions require you to do an art exhibition, a solo exhibition for artists, and just take a commission. The artists don't have to put any financial stake into that, and therefore they put very little effort in. And it really surprised me. I didn't realize that that would happen. And because I needed to do these exhibitions for the artists to be able to qualify for art exhibition, like art fairs, the larger ones, I didn't ride them for this. But if I have anything, now that I have the entrance into the art fairs, I'm making them do a financial, take
How
a financial.
How are you finding the tools and methods and principles of coaching that we're discussing useful or not useful in your work with them in terms of mentor coaching the artist?
Well, I did my case study on one of the artists.
Okay.
And I don't know if you want me to talk about that now, or do you want me to talk about that later?
Let me check in with everybody, and I'll come back to you. And
okay.
When you, I have a feeling that it would be helpful just to spend just a sentence or two on the framework of the coaching engagement. Like, how do you meet with this person? Do you charge them? Do you meet on a weekly basis? What is the framework of the engagement so that we can get a feel for that, because it sounds like it's kind of hard to nail down sometimes.
Okay.
I'll come back to you after we check in. Who else? Thank you very much. Great progress note. Very, very interesting. Very interesting application of coaching principles. Well, who else? What else is going on?
Hi, everybody. Stephanie. Excuse my
Welcome.
Voice. I'm a little under the weather. Everything's going well. With my client, I applied some of the feedback with her from the case study feedback, and she's actually surprisingly doing really well. I don't know what.
Why are you surprised?
Light bulb. Well, because she's been struggling for months, and I don't know what light bulb went off inside of her by guiding her to name out each individual thing and to take sole responsibility for it. I don't know. I've done that with her before, and it never seemed to work, but for some reason, a light bulb went off with this.
Were you
roadmap.
In a different position doing it this time? Were you more confident, or were you more specific about that? Did you believe in the process more?
I guess it's possible that I believed in the process more. I didn't feel any different about it. I have always felt very strongly. I don't know. Maybe there was a level of surrender on my behalf, I think. That it didn't need to be happen when, based on what I was teaching her or when I think it should. Maybe there was like a level of surrender that happened on my end of it. I don't know. But
see,
some
I think
the
most important thing
really well.
That we can possibly convey to a client is our belief in them, because that's what gets conveyed then and internalized as their belief in themselves, and they'll live into that and show us both why and create a way of making it make sense consciously, logically, and intellectually. And when you believe in a client, I think it makes every difference. So,
oh, yeah, I've always done that with her. I mean, she's even given me that feedback that, but she took it in a negative way, I think. She was like, you believe in me more than I believe in myself. And she her focus was off. But, again, I don't know what it is. It might have been a level of surrender on my behalf. I'm not sure, but she's doing really well.
Level of, what did you say, surrender?
A level of surrender on my...
What does that mean to you?
For me, level of surrender, like I said earlier, it's that it doesn't need to happen in my time, when I think it should, how I think it should. The unplugging from the fear factor on my end, based on my own personal experiences, it was a surrender that this is her process. and I'm really just a distributor of information. And,
that sounds very
and,
important, if I could interrupt you again. That sounds really important that you gave it to her for it to be her story and for her to recognize that she's writing her own story, that she's not becoming an extension of your interest or your desire or your story, that when she at each moment seizes that and takes responsibility and makes it her story, it's a different position vis-a-vis creating a way of moving ahead. So I think that's very wise, and that's something we all strive to do, is to give it back to the client and to not have an investment or a direction that we want the client to go, but to have it be the client so that they, for each session even, take responsibility for writing the story when they determine what they want to work on and where they want to get to each session. That's the beginning and the end, and then the rest is filled in with their creation. So I think that all is very important, and I'll bet it relates to the transition that you experienced.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Other aspects that you wanted to point out or highlight?
No. It's just all flowing really well. I'm excited
Great.
About it for
well,
her.
Super. Thanks for the progress note. That's excellent.
No. Thank you.
Anne-Marie, what about you?
Hi, Dave. How are you? How is everyone?
Great. What's
okay.
going on?
First I was thinking, oh, it's been a quiet week, and, you know, I'll just kind of sit back and give folks airtime, and hearing everybody's stories really helped bubble something up for me that I think I might have been, I may not have been giving myself enough credit. I have, since doing my case study with the group, which was about my struggle with credibility, personal credibility, I've really kept that front and center. So I've kept my, you know, what I've typed up with me at all times. I revisit it when I feel the pangs come up. And I had a few personal breakthroughs this week that I think have really helped to just show the transformation that this tool can really bring forth. It just happens to be in me. So.
Anything you want to share with us?
Well, sure. I am a trainer in a women's leadership program here in Cincinnati, and it's a paid role, and it's with women who are they are corporate women. I have 8 women in my mastermind group. I do group coaching with them as well as one-on-one coaching as part of the program, and it's my first real big experience, I think, with corporate women. So my peers, really, these are women I would see as my peers when I was in a corporate job.
Is it under
and a little,
your coaching firm umbrella, or is it with another kind of entity?
It's actually it's through the Chamber of Commerce. So
oh, okay.
We applied, coaches apply into the Chamber for roles, these roles, and I was accepted this year as one of the coaches.
Interesting.
So I have 8 corporate women, various corporations in Cincinnati, for-profit and not-for-profit, and I had my one-on-one coaching sessions with each of them this week. And it's a little bit, I would say, non-traditional in that they didn't request coaching. Coaching is part of the program. So there's a little bit of, you know, helping them with how they can use their coaching sessions and how they can benefit from them. But each and every one of them coming out of their one-on-one, they all went into it saying, you know, I'm not sure what is right here. I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do. So after a little bit of this is all about you and allowing them the space to say, well, where are you stuck, whether it's in their personal or professional life, every single one of them came out of their sessions with me this week and sending emails saying how much of a difference the conversation with me made, how helpful it was, how amazed they are at the coaching process. So I can't describe for you what that did for my belief in myself. I used a few of the old story, new story techniques with them in addition, you know, where it made sense as far as things that they were having trouble letting go, where they had trouble with old beliefs or assumptions or we talked a lot. Most of them, in fact, I think I talked to them about old belief systems and limiting assumptions. And
Are you able to spin off and do individual coaching with them, or do you have to keep it in the context of the mastermind group?
After the 10-month program is over, these women do have the option. I can't market that while the program is going on, but I do have the option once the program comes to a close. Yes.
Interesting.
So that's something that I'm working toward. But most importantly, they saw a benefit. I think it made a lot of difference for the 8 women for them. So that was just a huge, like,
that's
I was
right.
on
What's
cloud
your
9.
Configuration? How long and how often do you meet?
So we meet as the full group monthly.
How long?
Right? I think it's 3.5 hours monthly as a full group. And then, and that's like over the course of roughly 8 months. 8 of the 10 months. And then I have 2 one-on-one sessions with each person, one in this time frame, December, and then one again in March, April.
I see. That's
so
it's a
phenomenal program. I mean, these women that, all of the women that have come through it.
Did someone train you about Mastermind, or how did you?
Yeah, the coach that runs, there's eight coaches, and the woman that runs it, she's done this program several times, has trained us about Mastermind, but also we have a protocol, a training protocol, or just a coaching protocol that we take all of the women. There's 57 women total. There's a training protocol that we all go through. So we're all, I wouldn't say a standardized, but we are all following a similar
That's great.
Script.
Yeah.
Yep. But I went into it very, I knew it was a phenomenal opportunity. Obviously, the pay stinks, but the opportunity is amazing. And I was a bit intimidated because, one, I was new, I'm fairly new, relative to some of the other coaches, but also having just come out of corporate, and I see these women as my corporate peers as well. I just was bringing a lot of baggage to the table. And a few months ago, and this is one of the reasons I wanted to do this training, was for, my own story, really, first and foremost. I left there on Thursday just feeling, I was on cloud 9, to be
That's
honest
terrific.
With you, and
well,
it wasn't so much.
Thank you for sharing with us. I appreciate that. Just because of time, I'm going to move on. I want to thank you so much, Anne-Marie, and that sounds absolutely terrific. I want to check, is Grace here? Okay, well, Emmy, are you ready to do your roadmap case study then?
Sure. Do I need to tell you about the pay thing that you asked for, or do I just go through my little thing?
Just set up, just in a couple of sentences, the framework of what's involved with the client so that we kind of get in the ballpark. Whatever is helpful for us.
So I've been working on creating an art brand in Munich. And so my main goal is to find talented artists that I can use and help promote them using the art brand. So for me, the most important thing is this brand that I'm creating for art, and the artists get this benefit because it helps me with my art brand. But what I've found is I make the artists pay in some way, and they can either pay through doing service for my project or through artwork or through financial, like with money, so they can choose. And this artist that I did a case study on, she is a single mother. She's 50 years old, and she really struggles financially. This is what the case study is on, her money story. And so she has compensated me with art, so I get art pieces of art, which for me is just fine. And so in her story, this for me was very interesting because I, through my different professions, I'm more of a telling people what to do. So for me to sit back and sit there and let them figure these things out is a new role for me. And so I actually really enjoyed it. And this artist, she worked as a secretary for several years, And then she decided she wanted to pursue art. And here in Germany, you kind of have to go back to the beginning. So she had to go and take these special exams, and then she had to go to the Art Institute here in Germany, the Art Academy. She graduated from that role, but she's the only one from her family that has done anything artistic, and she's absolutely like the ugly duckling in her family, right? So she has no support from her family or anybody in her family that's artistic to help her. She did this all on her own. But she's a single mother, so she couldn't pursue the regular route for being an artist here. And so she got a job working for one of the radio stations, and she does illustration work. And that pays her a certain amount of money, and it helps pay for her studio space, but she has basically done nothing actively to pursue her art career. So she's just kind of let that kind of stagnate. But this year was a big pivot year for her, and she had a change at work. So she no longer had a fun job at work. They took away her illustration work that she was doing, and now she just does normal graphic work, and it's really boring for her. And so she decided that she was unhappy with her work. She was unhappy with the pay she was getting. And up to this point, which has been, I think she's worked there for a decade, she told me, she kept saying, I need more money. And I just pointed out to her that that need means that it will always be a need. So she needs to address that. And so she looked at her, the way that she dealt with her art, and she realized that she wasn't giving herself enough, that she was being really passive. Like, she was very active about becoming an artist. But once she became an artist, she was extremely passive about the whole process. And so she decided to start being more active. And she realized part of that was her family. And so she looked back and she was telling me what she wanted. She wanted to go to art fairs. And then we talked about that and what was the kind of art fair she would want to go to that would actually be good for her career. She had tried the little tiny ones in the city, and it wasn't working for her. So she made the financial investment, and she attended a art fair here in Germany, and she did really, really well. She didn't know anybody there, and she actually sold 15 pieces at this art fair, and she was extremely happy about that, because she made more than she had to spend to go there. So that was a big change for her, was to do that. But she had to recognize that she needed to make that change, and she did. And she also realized that even though she's a kind of a quiet person, that she needed to actually talk to people. And I didn't tell her what she needed to do, but I gave her encouragement on that she just needed to say hello. She didn't have to change her personality. She just needed to make it open so these people could talk to her when she was in the booth. So we talked about ways for her to be able to sell without having to be like a hard sell, like a selling strategy that worked with her personality. Let's see what else. And once she was at the art fair, when she came back...
Can I interrupt you to a minute to ask, are you going to configure this into the roadmap framework at some point?
Oh, I'm sorry. So I told you about the old money story.
I'm thinking about the time, and I'm just wondering if you're going to configure it into the roadmap framework.
Oh, I'm sorry. So she recognized... So I told you her old money story, and I have it set out as old money story recognition, what to change, mapping change, goals, success strategy, authoring her new experience. Is that what you're talking about, how I wrote it for you? Is that right?
Well, yes, I'm wondering if you're going to discuss each of those, if you're going to discuss the case in the framework of the
Map
system.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So I told you that she, her old story was that she was being very passive about her artwork and that she was not actively looking for sales. She basically just went with the flow, but she was extremely unhappy with what was happening. And she recognized this, her recognition of this was that she realized that although she was active at becoming an artist, she was extremely passive about selling her artwork, and that she was unhappy with her financial situation regarding her art sales. She realized that this her behavior was part of her struggle, and that she was not interacting with the buyers, and she wasn't engaging or encouraging people to purchase her artwork. And the things that she needed to change, what was needed to change, she decided that she needed to change. She needed to value her artwork more and take a more active role in selling her artwork. And she realized she needed to reorganize her life so that she could focus more energy towards creating art. And the mapping of the changes, goals, and success strategy, after deciding that she needed to make a more active role in selling of her artwork, she did some research and found some art fairs that fit more in line with her the quality of artwork that she created and would attract the investors, the art collectors that she wanted. Because she did this research, she was able to sell 15 pieces. So that was part of her success from that. Realizing the potential for her markets, she set out that she would redo her website so that she could find people who were interested in licensing her work and also expand the income potentials. Offering her new offering her new experience, she was excited about her changes. She's really excited about her changes, and she plans to continue expanding her exposure to new buyers by submitting her work to more art fairs and start looking for galleries in other cities. And also, there were companies interested in licensing her work, so she has. We talked about this, and she's going to start doing research and continue promoting her work for licensing. Her future, she knows that her future success depends on resisting the urge to procrastinate and to continue being active in searching for venues to sell her work. She realizes that she deserves success and she has all the tools that she needs to reach her financial goals. I have the initials AS for her in my report. She will create abundance in her life and she can enjoy her artwork. So she can enjoy her artwork, support her family without needing to work at another company. That's like a major goal for her is to quit her daytime job. And she will have more time to focus on things that matter to her, such as her child and the creative process.
Okay, are you done?
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you for that presentation. Let's open it up for discussion, questions, reflections from anyone else in the group. Stephanie, Anne-Marie, anything that you want to say or ask or reflect on?
I'm just so impressed and amazed at the transformation it sounds like this woman went through.
Yeah. Anne-Marie, is there any, can you say in a sentence what you think the transformative agent was in the exchange that you had with her? What do you think was the fundamental aspect of what her change and transformation was about?
Are you talking to me?
Yes.
Just
in a sentence.
Okay. The transformational agent for her was the change of her job. So up to this point, and it was sort of, it was a change that was a catalyst for other areas of her life. And before, with her work, she had a tiny bit of creativity to it. So it seemed to be a little bit of a, like a painkiller for her. And once that was taken away, she realized that she had to make changes. So that was like the big catalyst for her. And it was, she was talking to me. This actually happened over the last couple of months. So it was just, I guess, fortuitous that I was doing this with her when this happened, or, you know, it's fate that I was with her when this was happening. But that was like a huge change for her, and she decided that she needed to get to the point where she no longer had that job. Being in Germany, she's not going to give it up until she has like a very secure income from her art. And I also think that's smart not to give it up until she has a secure income. But that was the big catalyst for her.
Okay.
I have a really quick question. Did you find at any point or did you experience, I should say, at any point resistance from her through the process? Or was it like this free-flowing thing where she just got it and it worked?
No, this is, she's not a, I don't think this process was free-flowing for her. She had a real good success with this fair, but I've scheduled this new one, and she's involved with that, and she is making a bunch of excuses of why she can't, you know, I think it's scaring her. She did so well with this, and I think she feels fear now.
Yeah.
Of success. I mean, she really is, like, we were supposed to have a meeting yesterday, and she canceled, and we're supposed to have a meeting, or today's Monday? Okay, we're supposed to have a meeting yesterday, and she canceled, and she was supposed to come today before this to talk about this other art fair, and she canceled again. Mm-hmm. And she tells me I need to have these many meters and all this stuff, but I can't reserve space for her without sitting down, and I have to send in the application in like 2 days. So I can see that, I see this, but I can't push her to, I'm not going to push her to do something, and she has to be ready to do it.
You can recommend that she address with you how she's backing away and to look at what she's afraid of, what is the pain she associates that she's canceling, because what she's doing with you is going to parallel the process in her life, and unless that's addressed, then she may not have a mastery of it in her life. So as her mentor coach, you're seeing recreated the very process that most needs work. So you can absolutely recommend that you and she work on that and reflect about how it's the essence of her success going forward.
But do I address that to her, saying that I feel that she is some fear or some block is stopping her from meeting with me? Or do I push that she needs to meet with me for this fair? Or
absolutely. If you can't do it, who can? That's what she pays you for.
Okay.
You know, I would approach it. You know, one possibility is to say, no, I think I understand the uncertainty and even anxiety about proceeding, and especially when things are so different with being successful. When you get to the point of moving ahead to further that success and stop yourself, there's something that some pain that you're avoiding to stop yourself. I think it is essential that we understand what that is and look at how you can proceed, because I think what happens in the immediate future will make a difference for the rest of your life. And the way that you recreate that process in the work with us is exactly what's going on in your life, and it gives us an opportunity in vivo to understand what that's about. So, again, as we talked before, if someone has a plan, wants to move ahead, and it's a good plan, and they stop themselves, there is some pain they're avoiding. There's some pain they're assuming is there that they stop themselves. So what we need to do in coaching then is to understand that and to look at the greater pain if they don't proceed and the greater pleasure if they do. But remember the two basic motivations that we all have, to seek pleasure and to avoid pain. So if somebody's procrastinating, if somebody's stopping themselves, when they have a good plan and they know that it would work, then to look at what that pain is, even though it may not make sense, even though it may not be conscious or logical. You know,
okay.
Somebody says, I want to generate more money and create wealth, but then they get to the point of enacting a plan and they stop themselves. So there's some pain they're associating with it that may not be logical or conscious, but it's enough to stop themselves. So absolutely, that's where your work needs to be, it seems to me, is at that point where she stops herself, because you're recreating it with you in a parallel process about what's going on in her real life. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in terms of the relationship story and the relationship story of coach and client. In just a minute. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thanks. Any other comments, just briefly? I know we need to move on, but any other comments or questions? Well, thank you again for sharing that. It's a rich case and some interesting possibilities, and it'll be interesting to hear down the pike how things go. And I think some of the things that we're going to talk about today about relationship stories will dovetail with that.
Okay.
So thanks very, very much. Let's talk about aspects of a relationship story, and I want to include some aspects of coaching clients. We know the best predictor of human happiness is human relationships, the quality, connection, and time that people spend with family and friends. We know that it's significantly more important than money and somewhat more important than health. And these findings are summarized in Dr. Dan Gilbert's book, Stumbling on Happiness. Positive human contact, passion, joy, connection, love, create long-term happiness more than what happens in any other aspect of our life. Nobel Prize-winning psychologist Daniel Kahneman of Princeton surveyed over 1,000 American men and women to determine what correlated most with happiness and contentment. Heading the list, nurturing relationships. In a number of studies encompassing people of many cultures, the most satisfying core feature of optimal human experience was nurturing relationships. So let's talk just a little bit about the influence of relationships. Neuroscience demonstrates that emotion can spread from brain to brain. Emotional attitudes, disposition, and states of mind are contagious. This kind of contagion can occur without people even being aware of it. It occurs from brain to brain, from actually amygdala to amygdala, and mirror neuron functioning is involved. Neuroeconomists studied pairs of people using fMRI scans of their brain when they were interacting with each other. The brain state and emotion of one becomes mirrored by the other. In other words, when people are attuned to each other, empathically attuned, there's a synchrony, and the brain waves form a synchrony as if they were playing the same music. When one becomes decoupled from that or loses an empathic connection or stops listening, it immediately stops. A significant finding by Dr. Nicholas Krafakis of Harvard, he followed 12,067 people for 32 years and found the following. If your close friends are obese, your risk of obesity is 45% higher. If your good friend becomes obese, it increases your chance of becoming obese by 57%. If your friend's friends are obese, your risk is 25% higher, even if you don't know them, never have met them. In an extensive study that showed this contagion effect in everyday life, at restaurants, on average, people eat alone the least amount, with one other person 35% more, in a party of four 75% more, and in a party of seven or more, 96% more. So what causes this contagion? There are a couple of things. One, mirror neurons. Emotional attitudes, states of mind are contagious without people even being aware of it. Another is induction. If I gain weight, you gain weight. It changes the idea about what's acceptable, a norm or behavior in a certain group, and the group develops a group norm. Another is confounding. We share a common exposure to certain people, places like a restaurant or gym, intermingle influences ranging from nutrition and wellness to wealth accumulation. And essentially this means that it's homophily, birds of a feather flock together. Now, one of the things that I think is important in really looking at relationships, so I'm going to talk a little bit about working with couples and then move especially to looking at the coach-client relationship, because I don't think it gets talked about enough or really anywhere else. But first, empathy as a listening perspective. Empathy is a listening perspective, as you know, from inside the experience of another. It's our ability to place one foot in the shoe of another, to resonate with someone else's experience, including how that person thinks, feels, constructs meaning, and communicates. In other words, to know as much as possible their subjective reality, and to not get lost there, to keep one foot in our shoe. Now, a footnote here is when someone carefully crafts a speech or tells a story, the art is to allow the emotional response to reside in the listener or the reader, rather than expressing it yourself or telling someone how they should feel or respond, or feeling for them and embodying the emotion. You facilitate the client to have his or her own experience. We can learn from the poets who give it to the reader or listener to experience themselves, much like Amy talked about giving the experience to her client and having her client take ownership of her own story. Now, to talk a little bit about the coach-client relationship, there are aspects, as I mentioned, I don't see anywhere else and I believe are important to you getting, keeping, and benefiting clients. I believe it can make a big difference in your effectiveness. Now, we're usually taught as coaches to address the content, the agenda, intentions, actions, goals, and we discuss various aspects, beliefs, behaviors, performance. I want to focus now on the process. It's a little bit of what I began to discuss about Emmy's case. It's what happens while you're talking about something else. It's not simple or linear, and I think it's important because our clients will tell us a number of things in the process, what's most important, what their needs are, what's beneficial, what's not, what it is they're actually struggling with, even though they may not be consciously aware of it. For this, we have to listen very carefully and listen to various forms of communication. In fact, the previously uncoachable client may be one who has been unheard at the level of need expressed, or has subtly gotten the coach to respond in a way that reiterates an old pattern. For example, the coach gets frustrated in the same way that others have in engaging the client. New addition, but the old story. Or the client may recreate the same process as with others. For example, presents confusion about how to proceed, ambivalence with reluctance to move ahead. The coach finally ends the uncertainty and suggests an action. The result, the old story is recreated, and the coach and client have created a codependent relationship where one functions for the other. Now, these clients may be better understood in a different model that offers a more optimum responsiveness. Here's another example of what I mean by process. Clients know what they need, though not perhaps in conscious, logical, or daytime language. They will try in every way possible to let us know what it's like to be them, to activate the aspects of their experience needing to be addressed in a coaching venue, in a here and now model. We have to read this story accurately to guide co-creation of a new story. So this, I believe, is what Carl Jung referred to when he talked about the strong influence of the children, of the unlived part of the parent, how it gets expressed in a different way. So what this means as coaches, we gather as information, not taking it personally. Some of these kinds of unspoken subtext from clients, self-statements, although stated directly at times as if it were about the mentor coach. A wish or fear. Well, you'll have the answers, or, man, you don't have any answers either. Disappointed recognition. You really don't know what to do about this either, do you? Hope. You're the greatest. The unspoken subtext. So I too can become great. Feelings. To use as information now and to move toward a goal. To not go backward and understood as if still in an old story. The second no that always means yes, or once would have been sufficient. So as coaches, we listen carefully, simply, literally. Deepest truths are clothed in the simplest of garments. We believe what's said the first time before other words get in the way. We hear somatic language literally and symbolically, the rumbling stomach that whispers swallowed pain, hypertension, a pain in the neck. The role of storyteller and listener unfolds on the shared lap of the mentor-coaching relationship. Part of the experience of story making is the feel, the safety, the trust, the ambiance of connectedness. The resonance of voice as well as words with the knowing receiver, confidential, collaborative. As Lily Tomlin said, he listens with an intensity most people have only while talking. The message contains the message. The message is a full and valid communication to be understood in its own right before the venue is changed. In other words, the immediate communication and experience of a client yields an initial understanding before looking at what the client is trying not to say or may really mean or where he really wants to go. For example, often a client will say in a first sentence what she needs to do in that session. I've had the opportunity to see this play out hundreds of training sessions as mentor coach and dean of curriculum at Coach Training Alliance. A couple of examples. Well, I know I should just say no and stay on track, but here's the struggle I have with time management. Now, that's a billboard for an agenda. It's not a drop-off comment. And it's the answer that she'll come back to after significant work. Another example. I worked with an executive who began with, well, I know I'm going to have to dissolve this partnership, but here's the situation. Toward the end of the session, he said, this is great. You've helped me see exactly what I needed to do and strategize to end the partnership. I played back for him his own acknowledgement in the beginning, his first sentence of the session, and summarized the process and insights he had through the session so that he could make it really his own. My purpose was to help him internalize the process, the model, so that ultimately he wouldn't need me to do it. So it's not enough to construct a new experience. We need to help a client create and formulate a new model in which to understand and incorporate those new experiences. This is the P of the roadmap, program new experiences. This new model, this container of present and template for the future, is hope personified. My apologies, I'm having a little allergy, which you, I hope, is not distracting. It's a collaborative immersion of mentor, coach, and client. The past and present are never more distinguishable than at the very moment they're juxtaposed. This is the new story, now and next, present and future. Now, as a kind of footnote, I'd like to borrow a concept from psychoanalysis and talk about it briefly to show the usefulness in mentor coaching. Transference is the repetitive ways of organizing current experiences based on past experiences. Transference is the organizing process of how we perceive and attach meaning to people as well as to experiences. It simply means we use software developed in the past to read a current experience. So it's the combined neural lexicon of repetition and self-statement. Now, this is helpful because it allows us to use vast experience in order to quickly read and respond to situations. But at times, it can be limiting because we're using software developed in the past, and it could simply become outdated. So what we want to look at then is if we address, if necessary, we address the belief or the assumption of the old story just enough to cleave it from the present, to refocus on the new, evolving, co-created story. There's a blog that I have that I have not, I know we don't have time to go into the case study. It's an illustration of a mentor coaching that I did with a client who volunteered at a training I did to help an organization develop an internal mentoring process. And my client for the demo was a mentor herself, and the process of what she recreated with me was something that we then looked at to benefit her. So what we're thinking about then is that we always help the client distinguish the old story from the new story. Now, it takes two real people for this co-created immersion to occur. The mentor coach must come to know how the client feels, senses, perceives, and processes experiences moment by moment and frame by frame. The meaning attached from the past story may need to be examined in terms of its usefulness in the new story. This also means the client allows himself or herself to use the mentor coach in a way to simultaneously be inside the old and the new stories. And again, that blog, it's called "We're Always Teaching Others." It's in the blog archives. I believe is something that might be helpful for you. I want to look at mindset for a minute to revisit that in terms of what we're discussing here. If we each have a running account of what's happening to us, what it means, and what we feel we should do. Our minds constantly monitor and interpret. This is how we stay on track, or at times how we get stuck. Mindsets frame the ongoing account of how we interpret, how we process, and what we do. Mindsets are powerful beliefs of the stories we have about ourselves. So let's look at one sort of broad distinction, fixed versus growth mindsets. This is a fairly simple example of two kind of broad senses of mindset, growth versus fixed. The view you adopt can significantly affect the way you live your life. First, growth mindset. A growth mindset is based on the belief in change. You believe you can enhance and develop yourself. You become open to accurate information about talents and abilities. You use it to adjust and grow. Howard Gardner, in his book Extraordinary Minds, concluded that exceptional individuals with growth mindsets have, as he put it, a special talent for identifying their own strengths and weaknesses. In other words, self-reflection. The growth mindset of learning is based on a belief that basic qualities are cultivated, developed, and evolved throughout life. In other words, it's part of the story that we write. The fundamental assumption is everyone can change and grow through experience and application. You can even change how intelligent you are. Now, contrast that with a fixed mindset. And this is something that I want to mention, that when we hear it in any way, it's something that we want, in my view, to help a client move from a fixed to a growth mindset. Those with a fixed mindset try to make sure they succeed. A goal is to prove oneself in the classroom, in a career, in a relationship. The fixed mindset requires proving yourself again and again. Each situation seems to call for a confirmation of intelligence or personality or character. And often the repeated internal questions are, will I succeed or fail? Will I look smart or dumb? Will I be rejected or accepted? Will I lose or win? Yet, with a fixed mindset, no amount of confirmation can dislodge the hypothesis of mediocrity or the need for proof. A fixed mindset makes you preoccupied with how you'll be judged versus a growth mindset focusing on possibility and improvement. Here are some of the characteristics of a fixed mindset, and each of these introduce, in my view, a coachable moment. Intelligence is something basic and essentially unchangeable. You learn things, but you can't change how intelligent you are. You have fixed traits, so success is about proving that you're talented or smart. Problems indicate character flaws. Attempts to repair self-esteem include assigning blame or making excuses. Beliefs are often not conscious, yet we pay attention to them and hear them, and then we can change them. We can nudge someone toward a growth mindset. What can you learn from this? How can you improve? Here's an illustration of the impact of belief and mindset. 105 Israeli soldiers participated in a 15-week commander training program. In this study, neither the trainers nor the trainees had any idea that a test was being conducted. The training officers, though, were informed outside the participants' awareness that each soldier had been classified into one of three categories of command potential. The training officers were required to know each of the soldiers' personal data about their command potential category. At the end of 15 weeks, the new soldiers took a written test to measure the new knowledge of the variables they learned in training. Here's what they found. The soldiers who the training officers thought had a high command potential performed significantly better on the test. They had an average score of 80 compared to the middle group of 65. The training officers' beliefs in the participants made a significant difference in their performance. They lived into the belief of them. I'm going to go on mute for about 30 seconds, so hold on. Thanks, my apologies. Another example. A group of 51 women were selected to have short conversations with a randomly selected man. Each man, before calling the woman, had received biological information and a snapshot of the woman. The bios were accurate, but the pictures were not. Half were very attractive women. The other half were quite ordinary women. After the conversation, each man filled out a questionnaire to rate his expectations about the women. As expected, the men who saw pictures of pretty women expected their interactions to be with someone who was more social, poised, humorous, socially adept. The other group of men expected the women to be maybe more serious, a little bit awkward, a little socially inept. Now, here's the intriguing part. An independent jury of different people heard only the voices of the women from that conversation and were asked to rate according to just their conversation. This independent jury of men and women rated the women the same as the men attributed. The women unconsciously picked up on the beautiful versus ordinary opinion the men had and responded accordingly. They lived into the belief of them. Now, one final example. Same process occurred in a Yale study of senior citizens. In a longitudinal study, those who saw aging as negative and compromised actually physically deteriorated more over a 3-year period. For example, there was a significant drop in their hearing score equivalent to 8 years of normal aging in the 3-year period studied, just based on the belief system, the mindset they had. Negative feelings about old age can make someone physically age more quickly in areas of hearing, memory, even cardiovascular status. It reduces life expectancy by an average of 7.5 years. They lived into the belief of them or died into it. Now, I want to mention something about instinct and prejudice. We have to distinguish our blink, our instinctive thin slicing of data to quickly come to a conclusion, at times from a buried prejudice. Deep within our unconscious, we have connections that can only be called biases, even when we consciously abhor them. We each hold a collection of stereotypical beliefs and attitudes about social groups that exist often without our permission or even our awareness. These internal beliefs color perceptions, expectations, even decisions, and can find their way into the process of the mentor-coach-client relationship. The assorted stereotypical notions about social groups can range from male-female, black-white, elderly-young, gay-straight, fat-thin, just to name a few. Regardless of our conscious desire to avoid the bias of stereotypy, these attitudes can shape the contours of our daily decisions. So, we need to know if these stereotypes are buried deep in our psyches without our permission or even our awareness. The meaning we attach to what we perceive determines its emotional impact. So, by changing the meaning, we can change the emotional impact. With awareness, we can even alter our response to emotional contagion from someone else. Of all variables studied to address bias and overcome prejudice, the strongest correlation with overcoming a prejudice is a powerful emotional bond. And there are many learning laboratories for positive connection, friends, colleagues, mentors. Research suggests, and our experience informs, that we can develop awareness, reshape implicit attitudes and beliefs, and adjust biases. That is, develop new life and relationship stories. We're always teaching others how to respond to us. Your client is always teaching you what it is like to be her, creating an in vivo demonstration of what needs to be known so that you can collaborate and teach it back to her out loud. This is exactly what I was highlighting in the client that we were talking about at the beginning of this this seminar. You have to be open to that learning and not let your theories or your agenda get in the way. And be bold enough to say it, because if we can't, who can? That's exactly what a client pays us for. To story bust, to confront, to look at what needs to be looked at in a gentle way, but in a collaborative way so that both can tolerate looking at it and examining it for what it is. Now, although we inevitably listen within the context of our own system of meaning and knowing, we continually bridge to the experience and system of meaning of the client. In this co-created space, the client can develop an authentic story. What do our clients really want from us? Here's my view of what our clients want from us as mentor coaches. It's the adult version of what we as children wanted from our parents. Our clients want unself-conscious participation in serious work and sometimes in play. Acceptance of praise without embarrassment or deflection so that we can give it back to its creator as self-statement, as an accurate mirror. Full immersion in, yet not full reaction to, their full feelings, never losing sight of their internal perspective and best interest. To hope that we will see the self the client hopes to become, and see the evolving news story that sometimes gets obscured from the client's view. To see at times a thought, feeling, or behavior as an answer to a question its creator has not consciously dared to ask. Now, I got that from X-Files, but I'm sticking to it because I really like it. To hope that we hear the silent intent embedded in the compromised result, to see the hope camouflaged in the frustrating process. And finally, to hope that we will not be awkward, self-conscious, or say anything that would distract from the client's immersion in his or her process. The architecture of trust silently forms while we talk about other things. Collaborating together, even laughing together, gives oxygen to hope, highlights the relief and release of new experience, and pushes creativity to full flight. We help the client mourn the old story, to know that no matter how ready to change they are, it's like saying goodbye to an old friend who's been there a long time. The client mourns the self that she leaves behind, the self of the old story. Julia Cameron said it beautifully in The Artist's Way. I am astounded I could let go of the drama of being a starving artist. Nothing dies harder than a bad idea. Invention has been sabotaged and creativity imprisoned by remaining in the old story, repeating the same storylines. We are in the present moment together and co-create a new story with our clients. We believe in someone until they can believe in themselves, and they'll teach us both why. The corollary to believing the client is that the coach must be the kind of person in whom the client can believe and respect and trust. The client has to believe the coach will respond, guide, teach, and model in a way that facilitates growth. This bond, this immersion and understanding within the present moment may be one of the most powerful and most change-making experiences that the client has ever had. Possibly and probably the most. What we do with each client is not about being right, having pristine theory and technique, or even mutually idealizing achievement. But the bottom line is always and simply, does it work? Mentor coaching allows the beauty of waking up to specific possibilities, strengths, untapped resources. We help people become more of who they really are. Mentor coaching, then, means the client must risk bringing an issue to the table and further that risk by looking at it. The exchange must be worthy and true. It must be real. The coach must be fully present, fully himself or herself. Hemingway captured this principle, I believe, when he wrote about the craft of writing. Write the truest sentence you know. An ideal co-creation is to reflect or validate the client, to tell the client what the client already knows, and just a little bit more. That little more may be a challenge, a conceptualization, a nudge toward initiative or action, or a reminder to pause momentarily to consider, to contemplate, or just to celebrate. Now, I want to mention just briefly coaching with couples. Only a couple of things that might be a little bit different conceptually in working with couples that I think are important. In my view, the couple, the relationship, is the client. You don't have two individual clients. You have one client, the relationship. There is no confidentiality with one partner regarding the other. There is absolute confidentiality for your client, the couple, the relationship. Build a holding environment, a container for the work that's safe and respectful, that houses listening and builds trust. This container requires ground rules and boundaries with active involvement of the coach to establish them, because this is the new model that the couple will then download and internalize in relating to each other. Most important is to establish a process, a format for respect, listening, waiting for the other to finish, checking in, or understanding. We do not advocate for either person, but for the couple. We listen for strengths to build on, to use for repair. The case study in the curriculum, the us story, that's my story. That's my story of my wife and I, who have been married for 11 years when we were dating. We listen for strengths to build on. We counter the number one defense couples use of blaming each other by holding the couple accountable and responsible to be respectful in the relationship. Mentoring couples includes the fundamental components of individual coaching, though focused on the couple as a unit, the relationship itself as a client. So it's exactly what you know from before. Establish the coaching alliance, and then the simple coaching model that you have in the curriculum is, I think, something that can be usefully applied in terms of working with a couple. Now, for a couple, both external core issues and internal core issues can affect them. And external things like parents, family members, children, career, money, religion, neighborhood. Internal matters that you may listen for have to do with different values and different styles. For example, if one partner has their brain wired that money means security and the other partner has their brain wired that money means freedom, you're going to see two different styles in terms of approach to money. So recognizing those different styles can create an awareness of creating a common ground. So individual styles, temperament, health status, personal habits, money psychology, individual needs and differences, all of these I think are part of it. And to look at the needs and ideals of each of the two individuals to see what kind of components are coming together then to create a common ground, this shared relationship. And for all of this, the issue is the relationship itself. Now, we don't have long for discussion, but I'm interested in any thoughts or questions or clarifications that you have about any aspect of the relationship component that we've been talking about. Any clarifications first? Does this all make sense to you?
Yes, it all makes sense.
Any questions about any of the application in terms of coaching? Do any of you plan to work with couples?
I do, yes.
Uh-huh. Or have you already worked with couples to some extent?
No, other than myself and my soon-to-be ex-husband. This has been I'm unfortunately finalizing a divorce, and there's a lot that you said, particularly as you were talking about fixed versus growth mindset, that rattles around. And because of my experience, I have a lot of energy to, not necessarily to become a couples coach, but in particular, if couples have chosen to divorce, how to help them reinvent the relationship after a divorce, which is really where my focus is right now.
Yeah, I think it's really important. And remember, for work like that, the framework, I think, is really, really important, that you have to have two people who are both willing to work and willing to work on the mutual goal that they determine of what they want out of coaching. I very recently worked with a couple who had been divorced for like 5 or 6 years, and they both wanted to work on aspects of how they would relate to their adult children, how they came together and dealt with various things, and they never had anything in any satisfactory way because the woman had had no contact with any of the three adult children since then. And what I did was to schedule basically a facilitation that we met together, face-to-face. They happened to be here. It's one of the very few times I meet face-to-face with somebody. We met for a two-hour period, and then did follow-ups on the by telephone, and they in just a couple of months have reached a very satisfactory way of coming to address their goals, and each of them had related goals, and they came together for a common one. So, I think it's very interesting. It's basically the same model, the same process that we use in coaching individuals, except your client is the relationship, and the framework is especially important. In a situation like this, to emphasize that you would not take a call from one or the other, and that everything that happens when we're together. So I think it's very possible. It's a very interesting, challenging, and even fun process. I mean, it's not what I do very much of, but it ended up being a very fun process and very beneficial for the two high-powered people. Well,
I have a lot of energy to help people see that the relationship after the divorce doesn't have to be bitter. It doesn't have to be anger. And again, I think your point of both people have to be coming to the table with goals. Maybe not shared yet, but goals.
Yeah, and the acknowledgement, say, that this couple had was that even though they weren't communicating, they both recognized how much energy it was taking to not communicate. The nothing happened on service, but the energy that was there, that was expended by each of them, in different ways, was absolutely critical in terms of their desire to resolve things and to move ahead in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks very much. Thanks for a great discussion. I look forward to picking up with you next time.
Great.
Bye.
Thanks.
Have a great rest of the week.
You too.
Thank you. You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.